agenda was posted in accordance with Nevada open meeting law. The meeting is being recorded and is being held at the Western Nevada College DV Library. When public comments are taken, please start by stating your name and who you represent for the record. In the interest of time, I reserve the right to limit comments to 3 minutes per person and will respectfully interrupt if time is exceeded. If your comments have already been presented by someone else, please note that and do not repeat the information. I'd like to remind the INC members that whenever you are speaking, always first identify yourself for the record. It's important that we correctly identify speakers and their corresponding comments. Well, first of all, it's great to see everybody, most people in person. Thank you all for coming on out. Nice, pretty day. I'll now call the meeting to order. Tracy, can you take the roll call?
Yes. Done.
You can do it without talking. There you go. We're done.
I'm ready. Thank you.
Fantastic. Agenda item number two, public comment. Is there any public comments? Seeing none, we'll move on. Item number three, approval of the minutes from the November 13th, 2023 meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the November 13th meeting? Corrections or edits, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved. I move to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
Those appointments.
All right. Moving to second. Approved. Agenda item number four, college update. President Company. Information only item.
You're doing pretty good in the agenda alone. So I appreciate everybody being here today. Sean, I appreciate you being online. I know we chatted a little bit on text about the timing of getting here, so we did offer the Zoom link. We have our Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs online as well. I have Melody, Nikki, and Coral from my staff right here. You guys can wave. Thank you. And then we have Natalie from the System Office, the Vice Chancellor of Workforce Everything. Community Colleges. Sorry, there you go. So thank you for being here. If you remember back, the Institutional Advisory Council was created as a way to advise the college, in particular the president, on just to kind of keep the pulse on the community. That includes programs, anything that might be going on that's of value. It's sort of like where there's a local governing board in other states that where the community college is tied to funding. The local board would advise on that because we're not tied to local funding. When we did do back in 2013, a study on community colleges, we decided to put in this board, Institutional Advisory Council, to help with decision-making and information, and et cetera, from the community. We reshaped it last year into a 7-member IAC, so it's a little bit more manageable. The interesting thing is ours is kind of unique because most of you I see in other venues, or one of my staff sees in other venues, so we meet twice a year. That's the mandatory requirement. We prefer to do one in person like we're doing just to make sure everybody knows we all clean up, see everybody in person, but as much as we can, we do the other one on Zoom. But I do connect with all of you at certain times of the year on regular projects. So what I've put together today, because this is kind of the closeout of our academic year, I put together an update that shows our milestones from the past academic year and then pushes it forward and shows what we're going to do next year. My group has already seen this, so you guys can help me answer questions or drift for a little bit. I will walk through the presentation. Agenda item 5 is specific to one of the items in this presentation, and that's what I want you to be thinking about. So if you go ahead and look at it, there's the bottom line is the spoiler alert on this whole presentation is we have swung very heavily on high school students. And that's starting to worry me from an access component, but also a budgetary component, and there's reasons for that. And so what we're going to think about next year is we're going to think about how to engage more non-high school students. So that's anybody in this world who is not a high school student, predominantly over the age of 18. on how they can engage in community college and what might be out there for them. So that's nurses, that's everybody who wants to be trained for it. So that's what we're going to be talking about next year. So that's number five, and I'd like to spend nothing more than just a 10 or 15 minute brainstorming on that after you hear the pieces of the rest of the presentation. So I want to go over the goals, and I am going to stand. And Sean, I didn't know how to work the mics. Can you nod if you can see the presentation? Okay, good. Thank you. So this is our 23-24, and I know I shared some of this with you going into last year at some level, but I always pick goals and strategies for the academic year, and I share them with the campus. And the reason I do that is I want everybody to be focused. If we're not focused, then we're all going to do everything that's going to be great, but it's going to be 12 ideas, and we're really going to have done 4 ideas really well. So these are the 4 components that we focused on this year. You can see them on the screen. I'm going to go through each of them pretty quickly. The access and success category, there were several components, as you can see there. There's overall headcount, there's the performance pool, which is part of our funding formula. We did have non-high school students in there, but that is not something we focused on, which is why I want to carry it over. We wanted to keep and maintain our Hispanic-serving institution designation, which we have far exceeded. We wanted to implement more flexible learning options, which are ways to offer classes that are outside the traditional 16-week traditional calendar. And then our enrollment committee, we wanted to continue to support that group to define enrollment goals. One of the things that you've probably heard me say, because we do run into each other at different meetings, our goal for our headcount last fall was 3,850 students. Last fall, 3,850 students. Our goal for fall of 24, which is the upcoming semester, is 4,000 students. That's per our strategic plan. That's our financial targets, all of that. In the fall semester, we hit 4,400 students. So we have far exceeded our goals of this fall last year. We were up 17% in fall 23 semester. We were up 12% in spring of 24. We are way ahead of ourselves on enrollment. That's great. There are some problems with that, but from an access, we'll commend ourselves right now on access. Staffing up to manage that is the problematic part, but it's not too far out. But it doesn't mean because we're at 4,400 students right now that we want to go to like magic number 5,000. We do not necessarily want to do that unless there's a huge need out there. So a lot of this, I'm not going to go through all of this. HSI status, we're at 26% now. I'm sorry, we were at 26%. We're at about 30% now. It's on the fact sheet. If you guys look at this is the most recent data. It's a pretty good fact sheet that we keep updated. Nikki's group puts this together for us. So there's some things on there you can see, and I'll go over that, but most of the numbers show here. So way ahead on enrollment. That's great. That's a good problem to have. But as it breaks down, it's a little bit problematic. Also, the second category, so that's access and success. The second category is student experience. We want to continue to implement diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. We want to continue to upgrade classrooms and ways that we can deliver instruction. This here is one of our premier rooms for doing Zoom and live meetings, which is why we're here. It's not the best group for us. It's not a best room for a small group. You guys have room to space out, but it's one of our better tech rooms, and we're starting to model it more like this. We have experience programs. We students, first-year experience, WNC experience, first-time faculty experience, so that we can train people up to help students. We can tell students about resources. We had hoped to launch an eSports program. That one hasn't really lifted off. Our student life, we continue to do quite a bit. Mental health, we're supporting, although we don't see as much of a need as some of the other institutions. So student experience is everything in here. The reason there's a review up top and why I'm going through them so fast is, again, this is everything we've done in the current academic year. We continue to look at safety under the infrastructure category. We continue to look at staffing. The state did put forward 2 significant COLAs, which we have put in place for our employees through our Board of Regents. One of the things that I've been harping on is that cost of living adjustments need to be done on a regular basis, not 12% in any one year. I look at Coral because we have to balance the budget on this as CFO. We would much rather be giving employees 2%, 2%, 2%, 2% than 12%. Now we've got to do the makeup work, but right now we should be talking about COLA, so the next group in 6-8 years doesn't say what were they thinking back in 2024. So we're continuing to talk about that. We're adjusting our adjunct rate, that's our part-time rate, to be able to attract instructors. The merit discussion has been put a little bit on the side because the COLAs did kick in this year. Our buildings and grounds, we've worked extensively. If you drive around campus, if you do nothing else today, please drive around that loop out front and look at the new sign. It took us, what was it, about a year to get that? And there it is, because we ordered it, and it takes a while to get that done. It lights up at night. We want to show people that we're a campus. We also want to be able to look up, and this is one of the only rooms. If you look at the ceiling, I don't see anything leaking through. That's good. I'm knocking on wood, because it could all change tonight if it rains. There's some, two winters ago hit us pretty hard with the melting snow to the point where we're doing mold mitigation in one of our buildings, but we will clean it up and we will make it sparkle. And then organizational procedures are how we do things. So that's all the stuff we're doing. One of my goals is to always be visible. I don't want anybody to say we don't know there's an ecology person. So the signage, like I mentioned, we have a musical theater, observatory, art galleries, all of it. So visibility is a big one. Tough to measure, but a big one. So as we go into 24-25, I kept it very much the same. There's only one change on this slide, and I can ask you a question which one it is. But we are continually going to focus on access and success because that's what we do all day long. We are going to continue to focus on the student experience because student engagement helps us with the success piece. We're going to continue to work on infrastructure and operations. I added that because we always have to look at staffing and how we do things, and then we're going to continue to look at visibility. I am not purposefully not changing this because on April 2nd, 2025, we will have our accreditation visit. That's when we're up for our 7-year accreditation visit. It comes around like a comet every 7 years. We have a strategic plan that we are operating under that predates me but goes through 2025. So as we go into that accreditation visit, we will start doing strategic planning so that they give us recommendations probably in May of next year. I'll have to attend the meeting in June. That we can then spin up into a new strategic plan for the college, which will include all the pieces, which we already have pretty good articulation of it. There is a good, pretty good strategic plan. It's got a lot of detail in it. I'm more of a higher level strategic person. Like, our goal is like this stuff, access and success, and then drill down, let each department figure out how to reach those broad goals and not have it all detailed out, but we will write up a new plan. So we will continue to work on these four areas going into the next year. So, the biggest thing under the access, like I mentioned, is we want to enroll more non-high school students. So, if you take this little flyer I gave you and you look at, let's see here it is, second page, the one that looks like this with a map on it, you go on the top right, there's a blue bar, it says 41%. 41% of our headcount is high school students. So, if you take out 41% of the students, and you take out 30%. Oh, what happened to my thing? There it is, okay. The first word out of somebody's mouth will be Justin, right? Unless it helps us fix everything. 41% of our headcount is high school students. Some schools in the Midwest that I've talked to, because I'm on the Rural Community College Alliance National Board, have 50%+ high school students. That scares me, because it's just too volatile. It's actually not as volatile, it's just not knowing where students are coming from, but with the high school populations diminishing, which they will, talk to AJ here at the district, the kindergarten class is down, the kids are dropping out of school, so the pipeline numbers are less. So the populations will go down, but also, as we know from a budgetary perspective, we do get paid allocation from the state, but we have a reduction in our registration fees. So even now we have a boom in enrollment, most of which is in the high school population. We don't actually have a whole lot more money to play with right now to be able to staff up and support that population. So, because they pay a very limited amount, reduced for credit, or if we have a high school instructor teaching it, it's a flat rate per student. So there's really not a lot of money there. So our goal is to get, it's not to say no more high school students and push them away, absolutely not. That has saved enrollment in some of our areas. But our goal is to look for non-high school students and how do we attract them. And so we don't have huge numbers, same thing we did before. Like we counted about 2,500 of our students, 2,540 is non-high school populations. And we said, let's get us another 60 students. Okay, it doesn't seem like a whole lot, but when you're dealing with general population, that's tough. I mean, it's tough. I imagine we'll get more than that, but we don't want to put a goal out there that's not realistic. When we said we wanted to hit 3,850 students from 3,600 and we hit 4,400, we made that happen. That's a little bit overshooting the goal, but we want to be able to do that. We want working adults, we want all ages. We still want to continue to talk to dual enrollment students now so that when they finish their dual enrollment in high school, if they haven't earned a degree from us, then they'll come to us and finish that degree, because then technically they would be a non-high school student. Most of them leave Frog and go straight to the university. So we're looking at 2,600 here, 2,800 in fall, 25. One of the strategic things, and again, I was hoping to get you to brainstorm on item five, but I'll tell you what we're working on, is this idea of flexible learning options. These are classes that are not traditional 6 weeks. Most likely are not 8 weeks, because 2 8-weeks. These are going to be classes that are on a variety of schedules. They might be online only, where you can learn at your own pace. They might be online only with a structured delivery over the course of a month. They may be drop in, step out. It's a way to let people that are working actually be able to fit it around their schedule. And so there's different things there. We have focused traditionally on open entry, which is you can start September, you can start October, as long as you finish by December. Now we're doing even more of that. So that's a way to reach out. It's similar to what Western Governors does, but they have a 6-month program and kind of just, you just take as many classes as you can. You go in there, you do the work, and you go on to the next one. We're not in that model exclusively, but a lot of it will help us. We're going to also look at persistence. So persistence rate is students who go from fall semester to spring semester, and then we can also do retention rate, which is fall to fall. We lose a lot of students. Your next little piece on here, let's see what it is if I can do it without my glasses. I can't do it without my glasses. It's this one right here. The little clock one on the first page. That's full-time, part-time students. We're at about 75-25 now. It's shifted a little bit from the graph. Part-time students are really, really likely to drop out. They get frustrated with the time frame. They get frustrated with being behind. They may not have come to us college ready. They have to do some remedial work. They look at it and say, I don't want to spend 6 years doing an associate degree, and they drop out. So we are trying to keep them from fall to spring and then keep them again from that spring to fall, which means we've kept them from fall to fall. Very, very vulnerable population. We are doing good things with our full-time students. Again, full-time students see a finish line a little bit sooner, a lot sooner than part-time students. The part-time students are where we're struggling. We are 10 points right now, if I pull the data, which I've used for other presentations. Our persistence rate from fall to spring is 10 points ahead of the national average for full-time students. That's awesome. Our persistence rate for part-time students fall to spring is about 8 behind, but there's more students in that bucket, so that's where we need to close that gap. And then we're going to be looking at continuing students over the summer gap so that they don't drop out and disappear on us fall to fall. And then this is not under retention, this is separate. We have some new programs that are going to be. We're going to be looking at a culinary program as part of the rebuild of our cafeteria, Bachelor of Science in Nursing. We have two projects with nursing. We received $2.3 million to rebuild the nursing facility out in Fallon. We received $4 million to do the same thing at Douglas campus for nursing college. So more nurses coming your way. or frees up seats here, actually. What we found out at one point when we did the research was 12 students were driving from Carson Valley to here. And so we said we could put a cohort there. And then that frees up 12 seats here. And so it works for all the local hospitals. Fallon, too, we might actually get up to 24 students for 8 right now. The student experience, a lot of things going on in student experience. We do have a lot of campus activities. A lot of those center around DEI initiatives. We are creating what we're calling the LINC, the Community Career and Employer Center. It's the old bookstore space. That'll be where we have our next meeting, hopefully. Right? Is it mm-hmm. September we have our next meeting?
Yep.
Yeah. Space better be done. Hoping it's done. It's going to be an area kind of like an open area like this with some seating for students to work, and then there's going to be workforce offices around to help employers come in and link students with internships, apprenticeships, or if they want, we might do resume building. There's all kinds of services going in there related to career. So this is all the stuff that you normally see in those buckets. The scheduling piece is the one that is at the top of the list because we have to be talking about when students, not only when they want to take classes, but where they want to take classes. And that doesn't always jive with the way classes are delivered, because teachers, faculty, and students, they often have different preferences, and so we try to find a balance there. So some of that might be online, some of it might be Zoom. We're trying to eliminate faculty having to teach online, and then teach online like Sean out there, and then everybody here, because that's functionally two classrooms, but we could do one or the other. But we're trying to keep it in line with what is student-focused, and we're trying to keep our budget. We did have a lot of flexibility to offer classes with less enrollment over the pandemic, because we had some federal money to help plug that hole, but we don't have that anymore. So more look at scheduling and how we offer things. And we're listening to students and what they say. That's the most important part. And then, again, infrastructure operations, we continue to look at safety and security. All of these things, just so you know, the safety and security, DEI initiatives, and anything that we do on campus for the betterment of our students, or for compliance, or for safety, all of that is not funded specifically. That all has to come out of the money that we get from state appropriations for funding, unless we get a grant or something. And we do pretty good in that space. So anytime I say I want to put up blue poles, blue lights, those emergency poles, you hit the button and scream. I mean, that's all of a sudden, I talk to Coral and I say, hey, how much, because Coral has overseas facilities, and it's like, how much can those cost, right? What are we, like,
120,000,
right? It's right, 120,000 right there. 120,000. Which we hope we never have to have anybody push that button. You probably walked in and saw the yellow curb out here because there was a trip hazard and we put that cement in. That was probably 10, 5 grand. I don't even know what they cost now, but all of that needs to be done under our current budget. There's no special appropriations for that. But we should be doing it. We have to be doing it. It's just a balance. So we will always look at safety and hope we never need it. We will be looking at the overall strategic planning, like I mentioned, just to get us thinking about that. I am one of those, I've done strategic planning for years, and one of those strategic planning nerds. I do a lot of arm waving, whiteboard board stuff. I like to see a high level plan for the college, and then I like to plug in the specific operational plans for every department. I truly, honestly believe every institution like ours should only have one mission statement, not every department that says our mission is to collect money, and our mission is to teach, and our mission is whatever the college is doing, and everybody supports that mission. So it'll start to look like that with some planning documents for computing services, facilities, staffing, marketing, any area underneath it, so that they can support the overall mission and goals of the institution. Accreditation visit, I hope all of you are still on the advisory council. If you are, it will likely be an open forum where you can participate. So it's April 2 to 4, 2005. That's already locked in. That's not a tentative. One of those 2 days would be good if some people are available. Nikki, your foundation board as well. I think I called in last time. So we will we'll do that. I know I've been on both sides of the accreditation table. There is no accreditation process that's squeaky clean. We just hope that the stuff that comes up is stuff that we identify and are already working to correct. We hope that they see some of the value that we brought to the community and hopefully get some recognition for that. And then we continue to look at our organization for structure. One of our vice presidents has Dana is online, has 17 or so direct reports. That's really a flat organization. There's all kinds of reasons why it was a flat organization, but we really need to start building layers for efficiency, especially now with our enrollment boom. So that's more of an internal thing, but it'll blend into the strategic planning. And then the last thing is our visibility. We will continue to lobby for ourselves in the 2025 session. That session, I know Mary, I know you spent a lot of time down there, and all of us have. Every session, I'm like, wow, this is going to be like either the best or the worst session ever.
Right.
Thinking of the latter part of that statement, actually, because the state seems to not have a whole lot, and plus the cost of living adjustments have put everybody into a little bit of a fray with supporting staffing costs. How many of you have been to DMV lately, right? So my kid bought a car from CarMax, and we had to register, and they said, you have to go to DMV, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I actually almost returned the car, because you can do that at CarMax. Because I didn't want to go to DMV, because there's nobody there. They're like down 40% of their people. And it was a month, 3 weeks out, got an appointment, got it done. They're all nice. The ones that are down there, you want to tip them so they stay and don't leave. But we are down people, so the staffing has to be supported. So the COLAs were put in place, and the COLAs just suck any flexibility out of the state budget. And we're the ones standing there saying, what about caseload growth? And they're like, well, we just funded your staff. So I think that's going to be an interesting session, as usual. We're continuing to look at the signage. We're continuing to look at community exposure. We have things, I know we have a baseball field that's dark, but we have a musical theater, we have an observatory, we have art galleries. Our strategic plan is embedded here because we want to create a defined piece of our strategic plan that includes all three of those, but more so the observatory now because it's kind of the one that art galleries chug along on autopilot with the partnership with the Carson City Arts Initiative. If any of you have been to the musical theater, you know Stephanie's got that dialed in. Our observatory needs a renovation, it needs a refresh, it needs some more STEM programming. So that's the one we're going to focus on. Nikki, you put in a grant, I can't remember how much it was. Do you know off the top of your head?
It was, $4 million.
We put in a federal request for a directed appropriation for $4 million for upgrades, STEM, all the stuff we can do with the observatory, which things. Because we're the only ones who have something like that. We don't need to be competing with other entities in town that have different things. So So that's our goal on the visibility. So we'll keep doing that. Because my goal, again, is to walk into a room, and I did it the other day at the Lieutenant Governor's Small Business Forum. There's probably 125 people in the room. And I said, who knows there's a college in Carson? And I think all but three of the hands went up. And I was like, thank goodness. Which made me feel good. So they're all statewide people. So that's the goal. I think that's it. So that's a really fast and furious update of where we are. But again, the key components are we have burgeoned with enrollment, which is great from an access component. We overshot our goals. The students that we brought in are high school students, which is good because high school students, that provides access for them, because most students in our population don't have the advanced placement, the AP classes in the rural communities, so they get college credit through us. The school district pay a reduced amount, which means we don't actually get any extra money until the funding formula kicks in more than a year from now. So staffing up to support that's a little bit problematic. And if that population were to dwindle, losing, 2 or 3% of a 41% headcount is more impactful than if I lost something with non-high school students. So now we're looking at how to balance that enrollment portfolio, so to speak. So that's where we are. So that's this year. By the way, we did, for those of you who are at commencement, we did award more degrees and certificates than ever before in the college history 2 weeks ago on Monday. It was awesome. So we've done really good on that, and we expect it to scale up. And we're going to outgrow Mills Plaza down here at the pavilion. But we will figure all that out. So that's where we are. So I'm going to take a breather there and answer some questions, and then we can possibly move on to five.
President Kyle, can you explain the high school, the difference of with the high school kids and the enrollment, the money part of it, and are the school districts paying a portion of that, or how is that funding
working? It's really all over the place as far as it goes,
yeah,
but there's some general themes, yeah. So just so you guys know, all of you know, we contract with probably, I think, 17 different high schools in Nevada. We have three schools in Clark County. That is through awareness and partnership with the College of Southern Nevada, because that's technically their territory, and they've worked with those schools, and we offer some things that they wanted to pick up. So because of the overreach, not overreach, but the blurring of service areas, the system has come up with a standard pricing model so that we're basically sharing programs, we're not competing on price. And that was by request of the school districts. So the reason I mentioned Clark County was because we do not have faculty down there. We contract with high school instructors who are qualified to deliver the college components of the class under dual enrollment. And if that is the case, we get $75 per student that are in that class. If we put an instructor in the high school, one of my people here goes down and teaches at Carson High, then that's $85 per credit. So that's almost, it's probably 80% of the full amount of tuition fee. So it's reduced. The total, one thing to note, so that's the dual enrollment piece. And the reason for that is they asked for the overall pricing model to be the same. The state used to have a career and college readiness grant that was $5 million directed to the 17 school districts. That was abolished in the summer 2020 special session to put money into the COVID pot, and it never came back. At that point, that was a pass-through. The districts would use that money to pay the registration fees. So now it's a whole different bunch of how they pay for it. Some students, we do have students too, who just walk up here and take classes, so they pay on their own. But we have homeschool students, but the ones that are in the high schools, generally speaking, it's either the school district's paying it, the parents are paying some of it, Carson has a foundation that pays for it, Nikki comes up with some scholarships. It's more all over the place than I like, because we could end up with a class like this if I was teaching College 101, where half of you may have the means to pay for the class or ask the questions about it, the other half are not taking it for college credit, and then I've got an inequality on access. And so we're trying to always get the students into some way to be able to figure out how to pay the registration fees.
But the $75, that's throughout the system, isn't it? I mean,
everybody. For community colleges, I think it's different. For universities in the state, universities have different levels, they're a little bit more, but
I thought they were trying to get that evened out. Okay, thank you.
That's evened out. There are some components on the back end about how much we pay. Sometimes there's a stipend involved for paying instructors, and that varies from school to school. And so that's another piece of the funding piece. So we do get full appropriation on it, which is good. If we didn't get, I've talked to some colleagues around the country who have called me and said, how'd you build your high school enrollment? And I'm like, well, this is our, you know, and the formula kicks in and they're like, oh, well, we wouldn't get state appropriation for it. Our state doesn't pay for that. So they, no incentive to go after high school students, but we have the incentive right now, so. I was gonna throw out a number. Coral, back me up on this, because I can never remember it. Sometimes you give me all the numbers. Coral has all the numbers. There's two other pieces to our budget. There's the high school piece we just talked about, where there's a reduction. And that reduction for us on the registration fees for high school students is about $1.1 million. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And then there's another group of students that are under waivers, Native American waiver, National Guard waiver, that are basically, the legislature has said, they get to come to school and waive the fees. That's another, what, 300,000? Maybe, I can't remember the thing. Somewhere we were just under $4 million for the biennium, so $2 million a year, maybe roughly, that we have in discounts or waivers that we get the state appropriation from the students, but not until next year. But we never recover those original registration fees. And registration fees we collect in the semester in which students take the classes. And that's about a third of our budget. The state appropriations we get, we're currently getting state appropriations from the enrollment we had 2 years ago because of the way the formula works. So the boom we have right now, we'll get the additional funds, hopefully, if it's there, July 1 of next year, if it's appropriated through the state. And so we might actually get more money at a time when we always need it, but sometimes we don't need it as much as we need it now. So. Yeah, Wendy.
So you said that you expect some students to graduate from high school on your shared program and then come into a degree program. So the ones who don't come onto the degree program, where are they going?
So most of them will go to, out of this area here, will go to UNR.
Are they going out of state to college?
Some of them do. Some of them do a few here. There's a few here and there, but most of them will go to one of our state schools or go to work. But they...
But they stay in school predominantly, most of them.
Yeah, we don't have as much tracking like on the, as much as we should, but they will, every one of them that walk through, and they might have had like 16, 17 credits in dual enrollment. We ask them at commencement, where are you going next? And they're like, well, I'm going to University of Battery, I'm going to UNLV, I'm going to, or some of them are taking them up to other schools. Because that's the benefit of dual enrollment too, is that it's transcripted immediately, and most of them are in general education, which is English 101, 121. So when they go off, we had one, Nikki, what was the one that spoke 2 years ago? Was it Washington State she went to, or University of Washington?
Oh, from at the Rich Grove Stars.
Yeah.
Morgan.
She went to one of the Washington universities.
University of Washington.
And she could take the English 101. She took English 101, 102 in high school, and that could transfer it right into her transcript up there. So most of them start with a sophomore status. If they get an associate degree from us and they go to a Nevada school, they'll go in as junior status. So, and I went to a ceremony, I participated in a degree. So most of the time what happens is, like, I give high school students, they don't walk commencement unless they finish a certificate or a degree. And those are definitely either going to work or they're going to another school, because they're done. They won't ever come here unless they want to come to one of our bachelor programs. I usually do that like on May 20th, and then in June sometime they graduate high school. Last week I went down to the Matter Academy, which is in East Las Vegas, and they had a ceremony. And they had a program, and I actually awarded the degrees on like item 3 for WNC, because they didn't want to bring the 16 students up here, which made sense. So I said, I'll go down there and award the degrees. On item 3, I awarded 16 degrees. On item 8, they all walked with their high school diploma. So it's kind of fun to watch them get their college thing before. And this is students in a very, very, they are all first in their family to go to college. And now they've just finished, some of them finished credits, but this 16 of them finished a college associate degree. And so they're off and running. So for me, so number 3 on the list, Natalie, remember to tell everybody at system office, I remember the system plan, access, success, workforce, access, success, close the achievement gap, workforce and research. Those are the 5 components of the state's higher ed master plan. So that's closing the achievement gap through access and success. And to me, we just, we just nailed it on that. So anyway, I drift a little bit just to tell you how awesome it is, but I appreciate it. So, any more questions on any of that? There's a lot going on there.
You mentioned Matter Academy. They're looking at doing some projects up in this area as well. How does that interact with WNC? Is that a positive thing or a negative thing?
So they have a school up in Reno, I believe, but I don't think they have juniors and seniors yet. I talked to their people. They were at the graduation down there. So at some point, we may continue the partnership or however it works out. But we are not, like right now, the problem is right now it's snowballing. We're not actively soliciting partnerships. Things have happened like, because I've done enrollment management for so many years, we can see the pieces come into place. Douglas High School lost their automotive instructor. They had 140 students set up to take automotive. I'm going to make it sound simple, but it was probably months of negotiation, MOUs, contracts, the whole deal. We basically put one of our instructors in that high school to teach so that they could offer that, but then we could offer it because I don't have that many students up here. So we look at each district and say, what is up? And now that we've done that, then they call Dana and say, well, you did that with us in auto. Can we do that in welding? I'm like, sure. So that's how it just snowballs. And so I don't want to say no to anybody, especially in our service area. But if there's people, like schools outside of our service area, we're probably going to start saying, you know, we always say check with your school that's closer. Problem is sometimes there's not even a school that's close in some of our remote areas, but we want to not take on more than we can get, unless it's in the non-high school student populations now. So.
I could see that Matter dynamic growing in the future. I know they're looking at a couple of other facilities up in northern Nevada now, not on the high school level yet.
Or the elementary.
Yeah, but it'll be coming.
But keep in mind, for us, it's not a new population because that's school choice. So there's a defined population of kids K to 12, right? And so if they go to like a Matter Academy, or we have a really good partnership with Oasis out in Fallon, we've always had that. If they go into one of those schools, that's where we have the partnerships, but it's still the same kids. They're either going to go to Churchill High School, or they're going to go to Oasis if they're in Fallon. Or they go online or do homeschool, but either way, if we can catch them at some point.
Anything else?
I'm good on that.
All right. Well, thank you for all that information. That was a lot. And that's the build up to item number 5. Discussion regarding non-high school population enrollment will be led by President Duffy. Informational only.
Yeah, so I appreciate you letting me put 4 and 5 above 6 and 7 because I get to talk before you guys. I wanted to just take a few minutes, and this can be a plant the seed moment too. It does not have to be, I'm not going to use the whiteboard board, but non-high school populations. These are students, these can be the immediate graduates, or you see if they're a year or two out of high school, we can usually find them. They've either wandered, taken a year off, and often come back, but it's more the working adult population, most of which are working. So then it becomes incumbent training to scale them up. And we're seeing now more than ever the problem of employers who don't want to let people go to train, even if it means skilling them up. I mean, 10 years ago, I had machinists who would say, I lost my number, my level 2 person, and I want to upgrade level 1, and then backfill level 1. It's like, okay, well, level 1 needs to do this training. And they're like, well, we can't have level 1 come off the floor. We got to have that person stay here. And so there's like this timing piece of how do we actually get the training done so people can advance in their careers. And that's really the population we want to go after. So I was trying to think, you're all from different segments of the community. I mean, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? With the unemployment rate so low, it is tricky to get working adults, or I mean, anybody who wants to be working, in my opinion, is working. So then, and even the agencies like Join and Nevada Works and some of the ones that monitor populations who are not working and need social services, a lot of them are Fish, which Jim's usually here. We're missing two members today. Jim's usually here. We're working with Fish at some level, but they require a lot of substantial ramp up to get into community college. So there's a lot of programs we have for that, but it's the adult ed program to get them in, and then give them a year, and then we'll be up to speed. But how do we? I mean, what are you thinking about that? If I said we want to recruit more non high school students, what do you think? That's a response I get a lot.
What about
high school graduates, because it still feels like a lot of people that graduate high school don't recognize or realize the opportunities that are available to them. You have people looking for the AP classes that are in high school that are aware of this and Jumpstart and whatnot. But the average person that's graduating high school that doesn't have aspirations to go to college kind of graduates and doesn't realize what's available. It always just feels like that has always been somewhat of an untapped large amount of potential.
It is. It's actually my dissertation topic in 08 was that a lot of them went to work because we have such a robust economy, and then realized 3 years later that the work can only support so much and want to come back, at which point they've lost the scholarship money. Mm-hmm. I feel like that we're pretty good in that realm because we as far as recruiters go, we primarily only have recruiters in the high schools. So we have that ability to bridge that gap and push the Promise Scholarship Program on them, which means when they graduate, they could go to community college essentially for free. It'll pay the gap up for the other scholarship. And so we have staff that's pushing that. Part of that discussion is everybody, again, and I know where we are in the higher ed hierarchy. Nobody's saying they want to come to Western or any of the community colleges. They all want to go to Harvard, Yale, or UNR is their last choice, right? Until they find out they can't even get into UNR, and then it's like, okay, we'll come here for a semester. We want to make sure they haven't missed the window to apply for those scholarships, because that's like October 31st. So in their senior year, like any senior graduating in May of or June of 2025 has to apply for the Promise Scholarship by October 31st. And so we are going to ramp up the recruiting strategies on that to say, do it as a backstop.
Yep.
That way, if you don't get there or you want to do something, maybe it'll work out, and some of them do it. So I feel pretty good in that sector. It's when they've been out for a year that we start all of a sudden. We do have some people doing adult recruiting. We've looked at ways to pay for an adult recruiter or like a non-high school recruiter person to try to catch them. Because if they don't walk in, we don't know where they are. Unless they show up at your employer and you say you're not skilled for it. So I feel good in that space for the high school that are already in the high schools, but a year out, then we start this.
I wonder if there's an opportunity. I'm just thinking, like for us at the hospital, Western Governors comes through and they set up a table and they're doing recruitment right at the place of the employer. And we've probably had, I don't know, two or three different schools. Most of them are online right now that have come through, and they've just done a table or a booth outside of the cafeteria a couple days.
Are they pitching medical or like healthcare related?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of them are, like for a lot of our nursing leaders, a lot of our clinical leaders, it's a master's program that they can do online. I never stop, so I don't know exactly what they're pushing.
Grab some
swag.
Some of
it might be RN to BSN,
yeah,
potentially as well. That's there, so.
Okay, so outdoor recruitment or on-site business
on-site
recruitment.
Recruitment. I don't know how much of it actually leads to folks enrolling, but they're getting their name and their programs out there. We'll promote those same programs just internal communication-wise within our monthly employee newsletter or announcements that go out to all of the departments and stuff.
Okay.
And so if there's recruiters here that want to share some of that information, happy to do that.
I appreciate that. I hadn't done that. I mean, I remember doing that years ago. We haven't done that even where we would just send it out. Like I could send it out to all of you right now on the foundation board, mm-hmm, and say, if you have a newsletter, just put it in there. We're registering now, if nothing else.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. I remember doing the mailers, you know, the energy mailers and all that stuff back in the day. I appreciate that. Okay.
Well, you know, someone along those lines, handing out, remember there was 1 year that we handed out to all of our employees information on the scholarships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that was beneficial. There were a lot of people, yep, even for a small organization of ours, they're like, whoa, really? Didn't, mm-hmm, know that. So maybe, you know, as you're saying, for to set up a backstop like with the high school students, that we now would be a good time to exists as they come home and their kid's still sitting on the couch, like, what are you doing?
You're officially a non-high school student.
You just graduated, what are you doing? You can do this and it's free. Sign up for it.
Okay. That'd be a good idea. Yeah, that's good. Okay. We've had that too. We've actually had that. I don't know if we ever did a story on it, but the mother-daughter who came, I mean, the mother signed up after the kid had signed up at high school. Her daughter had signed up, and then they both came in. Remember the photo shoot, Nikki? I forgot who they were. What happened to them, where the daughter was in the business and the mom had signed up? Channel 2 did a story on that.
Vaguely.
It had trickled, it went from the student had brought something home and got enrolled in dual enrollment and was planning to come here, then the mother parents decided they were going to do it as well.
I think I remember we had a pile of pamphlets in the lobby, and by the middle of the summer, they were gone. People were grabbing.
How are you guys doing in your sectors, like with like employees? Are you short on people, or you're probably always short on nursing, right?
We're not running any travelers, which is good news, but we still have a lot of open positions. We've just been covering it internally with the staff that we currently have. The one area where we are the shortest is CNAs, which I think every healthcare organization in Northern Nevada, whether it's the nursing homes or the hospitals, it is always the CNAs. And they're that pipeline. Like, I just did a new hire last week, and new CNA that just started was already asking, like, how do I apply for nursing school? How do I get in the apprentice program? How do I get into, you know, the next steps, new grad RN residency once they get hired? And so laying out what that career path is for those individuals. But I think we're already, our nursing leadership's talking.
We're pretty linked. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Dana, I won't put you on the spot, but just a note that we're rebuilding the CNA program.
Yep.
So we need to rebuild that.
But that's probably our biggest area where we're seeing the shortage.
Okay. Anything else? You guys got any needs or?
The economy for us is everyone's nervous, right? With the inflation and the high cost of money and the high cost of construction. So it's our kind of, our world's a little more cooling right now.
Okay. And then we'll have a fall.
Yeah. Some of the things that I've been looking at in this particular space has been also on that long credit for prior learning, and something I think Western could really take advantage of in a way that like UNR cannot. Some of those shorter term, easier to digest, stackable credentials that are already there, but I don't think people really know about it. That it's, you know, you can do this semester or these few classes and then, you know, still work afterwards or jump into the next one. Because it is inflation issues, the cost issues of higher ed in general, and that commitment. I think all three of those things in our shorter term chunks is a little bit easier, especially looking at some of the non-credit to credit translation where applicable, because then it's even easier, I think, for somebody to like dip a toe in. And if there's a pathway for them to continue on, then you've captured them.
Yeah, we've talked about that as it's tough to upstart, but the credit for prior learning. Because we've got, and to credit, there's two pieces of that. Now, like I think you're talking about, there's the piece where somebody has a training skill, like a lot of them come out of the military, and that skill is here, but it's not like, there's no credits attached to it. It's just they earn the skill, maybe a certificate. But if we can translate that into credits and it gets them a little bit closer to an associate degree, then there's people that have credits that are just like from all over the place. And one of the initiatives we do have going on with Allen is the partnership with the Air Station. Because the sailors and the aviators out there have a hodgepodge of wherever they've been stationed, they might have two credits. So if we can take 20-something credits from somebody and say, okay, now you just have to do this at Western and get a degree. Even if they were to be moved, they can do it online. So I always hate the stories of people who have, like, if if you're in this case, I'm sorry, but come talk to me after. People who have accumulated a lot of credits but don't actually have a degree or certificate, because there's some people out there that have like 150 credits and no degree. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you could have had a master's, you know. And that usually means lost navigation and trying to figure out what you want to do. And knock on wood, one of my youngest is in that boat right now, and I'm like, you just need to finish. Finish and then you can do something else. Thank you.
Are the other community colleges in the state seeing the same thing numbers wise, trying to find the non-high school students?
I think we're more robust on high school than most other schools. Now, you've attended both of the other ICs, I think, so maybe you can provide some insights on secret stuff. But.
So as far as like, I think every college and university is looking for avenues to increase enrollment. So one of them is, who are the audiences we have not been reaching? So, I mean, whether we're talking about adult students, I think we have a lot of folks competing in that dual credit space. Other than that, it's also, I mean, always the conversation on retaining the students that you currently have. So some of those persistence rates that Dr. Dalby was mentioning. But yeah, I don't think it's uncommon, but I think it's a great conversation to be having right now that I don't think the other schools are having is, you know, really, where are we not looking? And I mean, this isn't as common a conversation as I hear about the dual credit and the retaining current students.
I know like TMCC, because I worked there for, I still, you know about what they do. They have a high school on campus. Has about, at least at the time I was there, had about almost 200 students, I think. It's pretty big. You were there too. I'm trying to think. It was pretty big. So that was kind of the major dual enrollment effort for that school. And if other students came up, and maybe they taught a few things out, but it never, the model we have was set up, and it predates me, but I've theories behind it are sound, is that schools like Mineral County High School don't have teachers who are credentialed to teach AP classes, and so therefore there's no access to college, and our campus is 45 minutes away. So putting dual enrollment in the rural high schools has been a way to provide access to college for high school students that other students get through AP. I actually think it's better than AP. My kids did AP, and several people, you hear stories, some of them get a 4 or 5 and they get credit and they're off to the races, some of them get a 3, it doesn't count. If you pass the class, it's transcripted right away, so that's why it's taken off. Clark County is so big that it's just CSN. There's just so much down there, and they're a college to scale where they have the most number of students of any school in the system. They're bigger than UNR and UNLV. That's just such a monster. So when they get calls and can't do it, they'll often say, "Hey, can you do it?" I mean, we have our 300 partnership with them. GBC is probably the same, but we are. They're hitting the rurals as best they can, but limited resources. Did I miss one? We're in the fourth one. So, but ours was the first model back in 2017, 2016 when it started. And so every other school, I think, might have been a little bit more in the how to get the regular populations, but now that it's diminished, it's tricky.
Yeah.
Even working with the Tesla Panasonic people that I've done for almost since 2015, 2016 now, it's such a tricky population. They're come and go, they take a few classes. We have great cohorts coming here with Tesla, but it's, mm-hmm. but they just cut a bunch of positions.
Does that create an opportunity? The 700 people, whatever that they cut, they're going to be collecting unemployment. They have a certain amount of time. They could come
possibly,
back
possibly
get the next level of certification for whatever it was that they were doing.
I'm guessing it's forced. Some of those, so that 10% they cut, if I'm not mistaken, was top to bottom. So it wasn't like it was all just the level one techs or something. It was all, but the people who are skilled at level one, level two techs, they'll get picked up by manufacturers around who work better.
So there's no opportunity for them to level
there
up
probably is,
during that unemployment time.
If it, that's a good idea. Let me make a note to check in with the unemployment groups, the Dieter and the Joint. They usually come to us, so we should see more. There was a time with Joint, which is jobs group, you know, pay for the training. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I talked to Zisa, they're like, we've got nobody. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nobody. And so so now they might have more people, and we already have, like, we've loaned them space on campuses and stuff like that. So.
Or they may be, like you said, doing a different manufacturing job that requires a different type of
training.
Yeah.
Yep. The other thing is, just so you guys know, Dana and I have talked about programs that are unique to us. We have a collision repair facility that is kind of, it could be scaled up with the right amount of resources, which we don't have, but we're going to try to identify that. Collision repair is one that like no other school in the area has, and yet if any of you have fender bendered, you know it's almost easier to trade the car in than try to get it fixed because it's 18 months out on some of this stuff. So there's more tech, there's more uses for that, for need for that. So that's one. The commercial driver's license program, which Nikki's group runs now, it's on non-credit. You've probably seen the trucks. It's one of those that's on non-credit. We might be able to do some non-credit to credit transfer to get an associate degree, but that's full all the time. I think you're booked solid, right? I mean,
yeah, it's a pretty full program and a good success rate too.
So we have it here and we have it in Carson and in Fallon. So we have two versions of that. That's unique too. There's no other public entity offering that in our area. There's a private. And then we're looking at aviation in Fallon. Aviation, I've had the aviation industry come to me and say they want to have us do instruction for pilots, which now there's a shortage of pilots. I'm not in a position to buy airplanes. They want us to articulate credit for the work they do. It kind of fizzled, so we're going to really work on it in Fallon because there are so many pilots out there. There's so much energy out there. That'll be the place for it. Maybe we build it here later, but it's unique again. There's really nothing. TMCC and WNC both offer some of those, maybe 3-6, maybe 9 credits top in ground school stuff, but nobody does the instruction piece. CSN has a program in the South. It's a lot of program to manage, and they want us to teach it because the students get financial aid and can pay for it, which again helps out getting people in those positions, but it's a heavy lift. But we're looking at it because it's unique and there's a need and trying to scale it up.
Does on-campus housing attract students? Do you think we're losing students for not having on-campus housing?
I think we could get more full-time students if we had on-campus housing, and I would love to buy those apartments down there and just flip them into something that looks nicer, which would be too hard to do. And
then, those things are so lovely.
That would be perfect. Putting a, and it was in one of the master plans. I don't know if it was like in one of the facility master plans previously. I don't really think there's a good way to create dorms quickly. It's so laborious on the funding. Even Lake Tahoe, I was talking to somebody up there and they got this huge state appropriation and now they haven't even, they broke ground and they were 10 million behind or something. It's like going to take forever. So I would like to acquire that. I think it would help us. I don't even know who owns it anymore, but if you know anybody, let me know if you hear something, because I would look at that as acquiring a property and saying these are now dorms. Mm-hmm. Letting the leases expire, renovate, refresh, and move on. But I think it would. Especially for kids in the state who want to like come right out of high school and then not go to Vegas and not go to Reno. I mean, rural kids who want an on-campus experience that's not in the city.
I think we might have to look at from a slightly different perspective, from the employer perspective. So I know from the tribe side, right, we're the second largest employer in Nevada. What they have had to do sometimes is adjust the job descriptions, right? So that now before maybe you needed a degree in this, that, and the other, and then they write, or equal job experience. And I think that's where a lot of it's falling off. I know from our side, from the development side, we probably employ about 100 people a year, if you include our seasonal workers up at mix. But what we've found ourselves doing, because there aren't enough qualified people, right? So not no fault of the colleges, obviously, but we've lowered our standards. The employers are now lowering their standards to meet the pool of people who are available. Obviously, you can't do that in nursing, right? I get that. But I think on the general side, that's what seems to be happening. So maybe we need to focus more on the employers and work with the employers and say, okay, how can we make it so that you are able to find educated people to fill those roles? So I think we might need to look at it from the other side and come at it that way.
That'll be part of that center that we create, the link for calling it the Career Center. Yeah. That will link in with employers.
Right.
We do that, Melanie, with our staff. We have like bachelor's degree and 2 years experience for associate degree, 4 years experience. It's getting people degreed up is usually the bottom line, but okay. Yeah, thank you, Melanie. That's
Another
I add to that too? Because I hear from employers also that are saying we're hiring people with, you know, maybe not the same type of credentials that we were looking for. But that's also, I think, an opportunity to connect in with Western and say, hey, we're hiring these people, but they still need this training. And is there a give and take that, there?
That's what I wrote in Mountain Job Partnerships, maybe where certain jobs, okay, you can come to work 4 days a week, but one day a week, you got to go to school.
Yeah, so then you're not losing out on the person.
I wrote it down, but I don't know how it works.
And Kyle, you mentioned something, revamping CNA, and I know you're searching a nursing director. How is that going? And is there anything the council can do to help support?
So the revamp, I'd have to let Dana speak about where we are with the revamping the CNA, because the state, we had a problem with our past scores, which in its simplest sense, there was a situation where we had one out of four students not pass one of the exams, and that puts us at 75%, which NRS requires 80%. And so even though we pled our case, we didn't win that. So we are rebuilding the CNA, but what, more importantly, we're trying to hire a new director. I don't know where we are on it, but it's not been good. It's not been good on getting that pool of candidates. There's just not a lot of, I don't know if it's interest or maybe even bump. Melody's helped with market adjustments and the HR side to put the maximum salary out there. As last I checked, we might have had a couple applicants in the pool. I don't remember. Do you have an opinion?
Same number. But we have, since these two applied, we have found two additional agencies that we can advertise with. So we're working on that. And we've also been approached by two firms who are, they're sort of headhunters, where if we hire a candidate referred to us by them, then we pay them like a flat fee. So we are in the process of putting agreements in place with both of those. So I'm anxious to see what happens to the applicant pool once we've got those in place. We're hoping it works. If not, we'll go find even more of those to do.
Yeah, the hiring has been tough. I don't know how many vacancies. Do you know how many vacancies we have now?
Not off the top of my head, but last time I looked at our full-time open recruitments, we had nine.
Nine?
Yeah. Which is pretty typical.
Yeah.
That's pretty typical.
It's actually better than I thought. One time we had like 50 or 20. So we tend to lose people to the state.
It does feel worse, yeah.
Yeah. We lose people to the state because they, similar on the admin side, like or the classified side, they can go negotiate a new contract and just be 2 miles down the road. Other schools don't necessarily have that problem. I imagine Clark County is pretty similar. So. Well, so I'll leave it at that. We won't squeeze it. Sean, if you think of anything, shoot me an email, but I'm soliciting feedback on that. I appreciate those ideas. Some of those I haven't heard of, I haven't thought of. That's good to hear. So we will put all that into the strategic plan and come back and talk to this group and talk to the campus about it and start putting some initiatives in place, some of which, like the credit for prior learning discussion, the pieces that talk about things that have to be done. We always look for grant money to find a person to be able to help do it, because all of our plates are full. We're in an all-you-can-eat barbecue all the time, and our plates are full. So we don't, and that only means that there's not a will to do it. It just means there's not enough time in the day. So if we can contract it, it helps. So I appreciate that feedback. Anything else, please send it to me, send it to Tracy, any of the staff. I appreciate it.
Move on to item number 6, remarks from Chair. Informational only. And just thank you for such a great presentation today, President Duffy. Lots of good information, lots of numbers. And I think that, you know, we can help to get the word out to some other groups to help get some adjustments, so you're not quite as heavy on the high school side of things. Get the word out. And item number 7, remarks from WNCIC members, informational only. Are there any remarks from the members? Move on to number 8, new business for information only. Does anyone have any new business?
So new business would be anything you want to hear us read the report on or have questions on for our fall meeting? Because I know we'll have at least one meeting in the fall. We've set ourselves up to have one each semester. So if there's anything you'd like to think about too, we can always add. I mean, I'm willing to add stuff to the agenda later. Usually I do updates and that spurs all the questions. So I don't see anything today. So we'll keep rolling. Number 9, public comment. Is there any public comment? All right. There's no further public comment. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do we have a date in September, darling?